Hello and welcome to an episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
Yeah, I just realized we're at the end of March now. We're heading into April, and okay, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me many, many Splatfest over. Yes, Fry is forever cursed. that's Splatfest. I mean, okay. I'm happy that it's much more balanced out. I mean, we'll talk more, but it's definitely improved since the last Auto Splatfest, but dang, that sweep from Big Man.
Hey, Will. Will.
What?
I've paid my dues time after time. I've had my sentence, committed no crime. But it was great. To the chorus. We are the champions, my friends. Dun, 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 dun. And we'll keep on fighting to the end. Okay. See, I get to do the musical this time. I have the musical intro. And sadly, not on my queen party is Skull Kid Scott.
Yeah. Well, Fry will have her day.
Yeah.
One day.
Someday.
It's not this day.
it's just really stinks that it's apparently that Fry definitely has the go-to category to go the shoe in, but no, apparently either be Shimmer or Big Man has to go. And apparently, unfortunately, now it feels from what people says it's more or less it's a skill issue that y'all.
Does this make Fry the Vegeta of DK? You'll get your Santa son, Vegeta. Who am I kidding? Death Metal reference.
At the rate we're going, yes, Fry apparently is Vegeta.
Yeah. I mean, we all know she lost that rap battle against Off the Hook. So, yeah.
That was another like shoe in his land. Plus, of course, the keyboards. Yeah, I should have figured Marina, Sayonara, everything is everything of that.
See, I didn't even mention that Marina was the keyboard artist. I should have. That would have instantly guaranteed me victory. So, but yes, we have a lot of stuff to talk about today, including a very interesting main event, but we'll get it all started off with what have you been playing? And for me, it took me a while because I had an interesting weekend, including a Comic-Con over at Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Very fun show. I did really, really well. I was really happy with myself. There were some interesting cosplays, including I saw Princess Peach. Oh, will you like this one? I saw Ruby Rose.
Oh, nice.
It was a male Ruby Rose. That was
oh, cool. Okay,
appreciate
cool,
that.
Cool.
I saw there was a guy who was half Jack Skellington, half Sally. So,
I think that was fun.
Let's see, what were some of the other ones? And then I decided to crash the cosplay party, and all you had to do during the cosplay contest was fill out a form, right? So I filled out the form, I handed it to my friend who was the showrunner and host. He goes, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Just read the card." He goes, "Okay, this is Todd Black and cosplay name, I'm just Ken." And I started to sing the song. Yeah, it was great. And then I did a secondary stunt later on where I just shouted, "I am Kenuff, dang it! I am Kenuff!" So, good times at the con. But eventually, I did jump back into Baldur's Gate 3. First and foremost, Karlach is still incredible.
Mm.
Like, yes. as if there was any doubt. But you, after a while, and after you meet someone like Mitsuru, you're just like, you know, did I just misremember how great Karlach was? No, I did not. She's always been great. You know, it's like that astronaut with the gun meme. You know, I was like, wait a minute, Karlach's still great? She always has been. So, Karlach's still great. And but I forgot how tricky the gameplay was. Like, I got into it, I saved it before I played, remember, because I was playing the game during Christmas period, and then I got Persona 3 Reload from Atlus, so I had to play that because I wanted to get the review in on time, and I did, and Atlus didn't put me in the Atlus trailer, but I will move on eventually. maybe that's the answer I'm looking for. So I had to pause, but I paused it in a key part of Act 2. So when I got back into the game, I decided to do a few mini quests that I had left hanging around. And then I jumped into a very key part of Act 2. I won't spoil it, but it involves Shadowheart. And I had to fight this guy named Balthazar. And he summons, like, I kid you not, like 13 undead whatevers to come and fight me. And I'm like, okay, if I can kill Balthazar, all of them should go away. Yeah, that didn't work. That didn't work at all. Also, I had to do a kind of a cheap trick to kill him, but he was also really cheap in his magics. Like, he weakened Will, like, with one shot to, like, 6 health and poisoned him.
Oh, jeez.
I know, with one shot, and then he's teleporting around. I'm just like, what do you expect me to do here? So I used a boom arrow and shot him into the abyss. And they're like, and I was looking at a guide just to make sure there wasn't another way. And it goes, nah, if you do that, though, you aren't going to get any, you won't get to loot it. And I'm like, I don't care. Just kill the dude. So it took me forever to slowly pick off all the undead that were coming at me, because some of them were just broken. And then there were, like, a lot of them were archers that had great range. And eventually I got through. Then I had to make a key choice. I won't spoil that. Then I head to the Moonrise Towers to go and start fighting Kethric Thorm's army. And I get Jahira at my side, which is awesome. She's great. And she has her party of supporters. And so we storm Moonrise Towers. And there's like, I don't know, 15 bad guys? But there's also like 12 of my party now, including the Jahira's supporters. And I'm like, yep. Okay, we got this. I didn't have it. I didn't. I went after the troll first, which I maintain was the good move, because that probably did a lot of damage. Killed it quickly. Then I started trying to pick off the other ones, and then they started using like combo spells to like keep me bundled together so they could drop a massive ball called the Hunger of Hadar, which is so broken. It is so broken. It slows you down, it limits your spells, and it damages you every turn. So it's just like my party, including my supporters, like my outside supporters, were getting picked off slowly, and I'm like, fine. So I rewind time, I go up to the main disciple, then I learned, no, she wasn't the one casting Hunger of Hadar. It was all the other adepts, and they could do it at least once.
Aw, that's annoying.
It was so annoying! And I worked my way through after many, many saves. Like, seriously, save scrumming has never felt so good. And I swear, if you look at my save files currently, there's at least 50 from Moonrise Towers just featuring all of my many attempts of trying to get through that. And then I get to a key point, and then this Warden character shows up with 90 health, lots of arrows, like special arrows, magic spells, and she's like picking me off, and I lose Jahira. I'm like, I ain't losing Jahira. She's hot. I mean, she's a great character, and I totally respect her. And okay, first of all, she's not as hot as Karlach, but she's epic. But Karlach forever. But I'm like, I'm not losing Jahira. She's great. And so I rewind, but I'm like, how long do I rewind time? So I went back like 30 minutes, and then I'm like, no, screw that, it's too far. So I went back like 15 minutes, and then made some small adjustments, and I was able to make it through, but dang, did a lot of Jahira's people die. Like, they're dead. They're so dead.
But Jahira's fine. That's what matters.
Yeah, remember, it's a hero's death. It's a hero's death. And Jahira lived, obviously. But, and now I'm like getting ready to face Kethric Thorm. It's right where I stopped before I went to have dinner. And yeah, the game is still great. I mean, I love this game. It's a lot of fun. But if I was to make nitpicks, like, I would not give it a perfect score. I'm just being honest. I would not. And two of the biggest things is that sometimes these battles are just, if you're not, like, emphatically prepared, you're going to lose. And you're going to die. And then you have to, like, go back, which is why they encourage save scrumming, obviously. But I don't want to say it shouldn't be this hard, but it shouldn't be this hard. It really should. Like, again, this Warden character was literally like teleporting in and out of the map, and I have no idea how she was doing that. I'm like, where did you come from? Then she's gone. Like, was that a glitch? Was that just a gameplay mechanic? I don't know. I don't know. That sounds familiar. I could have sworn that was a running joke of last week's show. Surely that won't be coming back later on.
The catchphrase of sorts.
No. Yeah. Embracing New Horizons and all that. The second thing is that the game doesn't, I want to say, explain enough at times. Like, it had been months since I played, like, literally months since I had played. So I was, like, trying to remember everything. And then I go into this battle, and I somehow forgot that I didn't have any potions on a couple of my characters, including one who absolutely needed it. It wasn't Karlach. Technically, she had some, but Will did not have any, even though it's like he really should have. And so I had to go and drop some to him. And then I couldn't give one to Jahira because she technically wasn't in my party. And then the special scrolls that I had bought, which were really expensive, which could have totally saved my butt 1,000 times over, I couldn't use because they weren't specifically put into my battle menu. But I had like basic stuff, like basic poison. Thanks. That's so helpful. No, it's not.
So much. Not.
So much. And so after that battle, I thankfully the quartermaster survived, which is great because she's awesome. So she's like, she literally said, "Oh yeah, it's never nice picking the resources off the dead, but the fight's not over." And then she shows me her menu, and I'm like, "Yeah, I need that. I need that. I need that. I need that. I need that." So I'm like, I literally drain my funds, and I'm like, "Oh yeah, I have a bunch of stuff I can sell because I picked everybody clean." And I start selling like armors out the wazoo and everything. Plate armor. It's great for restocking your troves. And then I bought more stuff, and then I went to everybody's menu. I'm like, "Okay, put this here. Give you potions. Give you this scroll. Give you this. Give you that." And it's just like, there's so much to remember. It's just, you just do. And then even during like the basic battles, I had like there was a smaller battle right after, and I'm like, "Oh yeah, I got this." And then this one character just shows up and like, "No, you don't got this." I'm like, "Fine." So thankfully, I was able to get that with relative ease. But I'm like, I'm ready. If the next fight's like way too much, I'm gonna be like, "Nope, rewind, get out, do a long rest, get fully charged up, so I don't have to deal with this again." So I still love this game. Like, there's so, and I'm sure that Act 3 is just as good, if not better, especially after all the improvements that Larian has made.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much to enjoy, but man, you have to be willing to spend like an hour or longer at times doing these battles, and it's not the most fun thing. Like, here's for context. For today, when I did the Moonrise Tower battle, the first one, I was already in the battle like a good 30-40 minutes, give or take. And then I had to rewind and then do it for at least another, I'll say another 45 minutes, at least. And then I spent another 15-20 minutes doing, the buying, trading, and making sure my party was ready. Then I had another battle, which took like another 10 minutes. And then after that, I was like, I'm just going to walk away now because I know something, because they did an autosave. And when they do an autosave, you know something big is about to happen. When the game is warning you by saying, like, "Hey, here's an autosave just in case something goes wrong." So, but yeah, still love this game. Characters are great. So well written. Like, Larian and their squad should get all the credit in the world for how it's written. Like, there was a big moment with Shadowheart where, I won't spoil, but she had a crisis of conscience, and it was great. And then I had a moment with Gale where, like, we're literally just, like, sitting on a patch of grass looking at the stars, and it's very romantic, man. But, I'm with Karlak, so stop it. he just wanted a friend in that moment. I can respect that. And he's like, I don't want to die, but I need to because I need her. I need the goddess's forgiveness, So, and I can't wait to see where things go from here. Like, that's just how much fun this is. So I will be doing my best to play it during the weekend. I will be having work, but hopefully I'll get that all done so that I can enjoy Karlak. I mean, the game and all that. So the irony will be if I ever was to do a second playthrough, which would definitely be a commitment. Like, I'm just saying, like, I would, like, that would be like me trying to jump back into Persona 5. Like, I could do it just so I could, get a run with Makoto. In this case, I would do it with Shadowheart. But, like, that's a commitment. That's a commitment to, like, try it all over again and do the 100 hours and so. Like, are you willing to? Are you willing to do the save scrumming again, Todd? Are you willing to do? I don't know.
Like, if anything else, like, Baldur's Gate is more or less that game that you can easily spend over hundreds, like, again, in multiple runs. And, like, again, the dark run, whatever, different routes, whatever it may be, like, you can easy it. And thankfully, there are, like, the options of obviously skipping, like, some of the cutscenes here in case you like, repeat stuff and all that. Yeah. like in Persona. But, yeah, it's these kind of games, like, when you think about doing a second run, only if there's, like, one, either be a drought period or, like, you just have that extra time, like, why not? Might as well start another run again. Yeah.
So, very much enjoying it. And this will be what I play until Paper Mario comes out, because there's nothing in April for me, so I will just keep enjoying Karlak. I mean, the game until something else comes out.
Yes, and all the great Larian plot. Yes,
such great red skinned plot. Yeah, I'm just like, I know this is a pun, but I just think it's so hot when Karlach like getting ready to kiss you and you can see the red flames and then they turn blue. Like, that's just like a thing. It's like, you know, these are the flames you can't touch you with. These are the flames I can't touch you with. Like, it's that little detail, you know? And then she's just so happy. She's so happy.
She is such a puppy. Yes.
Yes.
Great. Like, stick close to Mama K. Yes, ma'am. Yes. Ma'am. And remember, I think it was last week or the week before that, I was like, you know, I haven't met a 7-foot cosplayer of Karlach, but if you are out there, you're the perfect woman. I'm just saying.
I mean, I'm surprised you, like, I'm not sure, like, it was also on Twitter as well. Like, I know PAX, is it PAX East or PAX West?
PAX East was last week,
Yeah, because, like, I know, like, a very famous cosplayer, Autumn Ivy, who did a very great cosplay of Karlach. I mean, again, not 7 feet, but still aren't big enough and has a great build for it. Yeah, she was cosplaying us over there in PAX East.
Yeah,
and,
go ahead.
Yeah, like, there was, like, a big booth for Baldur's Gate 3 with, like, even with the Mind Flayer and all that. Very great a group of cosplayers out there as well.
Yeah, Autumn Ivy, I know of her. She's... I don't remember. I think it's just because I follow a lot of cosplayers. And I got friends who are cosplay, but she's great. Like, she's very, you know, positive person, you know, doing inspirational videos and all that. She's also jacked. She's like, she's really muscular. So.
Yep. She's got the build for it.
So props to you, Autumn Ivy. I know you're not listening, but hey, I'm sure you can feel it in spirit that we are praising your cosplay because we absolutely are. So, and just keep being the inspirational person that you are. I know a lot of people appreciate it. So, but yeah, love Baldur's Gate 3. I'm glad to be in it, and I'm very curious to see what happens from here. But please don't keep giving me these like 2-hour battles. I want to actually enjoy the actual pot, actual plot, not named Karlach. So, but yeah, that's honestly all I've been playing. Of course, I've been playing Heroes, but it's been a lighter week, so whatever. But Scott, what about you? What have you been playing?
Just the most important one is I finally have gotten to the games I need to review. The Soul Skull and Bones thing has messed up a lot of my review schedule.
wait, the quadruple A game messed up your schedule?
Yeah.
My gosh!
It's just a game that I just needed to get my taste back so I could remember what I liked about games.
But,
exactly.
Okay, I do want to pause here because did you watch the Honest trailer?
Yes, I did.
Do you remember the joke that I made that they totally copied?
Yes.
Okay, well, for those of you who haven't watched the Honest trailer for Skull and Bones, which is out now, during a previous podcast, we were talking about Scott's review of Skull and Bones, and I go, there was an Honest trailer about Multiverse of Madness, and it goes, you could watch this, or you could just watch Everything Everywhere All at Once. And I'm like, well, that applies to Skull and Bones. Just play Sea of Thieves. And then they made that exact joke. They literally skipped the starring section and just went, starring, just play Sea of Thieves.
Yeah.
It was
the fastest starring ever.
Indeed. Totally worth it.
Yeah, so I played a game called Ast Libra Revision, The Cave of Phantom Mist.
You're making that up. You're making that up. Stop choosing these ones that aren't real.
So The Cave of Phantom Mist is a DLC for the game that's just Ast Libra Revision. So some small context, Ast Libra itself was a free game that was made by a single dev who just basically wanted to make the game of their dreams kind of a deal. So they did a lot of like 2D pixels type of a thing. And they basically just wanted to make a game they wanted to play, which I mean, yeah, I can understand that. And so Ast Libra Revision is where they got some more funding. They got a publisher. They got some help on the side from other developers, those namely from Vanillaware to help with the art and the animation. And it looks pretty decent. I think Vanillaware games look better, but with what it is, it still looks really good. It's a 2D side-scroller action RPG. And the part that I played the DLC is its roguelite expansion, basically, where you start off as the baker's daughter. And you realize that the Guild of Heroes, who is planning to save your village and do all this stuff for you, is now just disappeared and gone. Which the Guild of Heroes is the main cast of the actual game. And so as the baker's daughter, you have to find them and go through what's known as the Cave of Phantom Mist. And the roguelite features is basically you get everything super RNG heavy, but you can go through what's known as a stratum every so often. And you get more stuff as you go through the floors. And after every 10 floors, there is a giant boss at the end that when you beat, you can then enter a new stratum and just basically redo that. And there's lots of items and weapons and enemies. And it's basically just focused on just the combat and the exploration of the mechanics of the game, which the mechanics of this game are actually really good, really rock solid. For an action RPG, it does really good for 2D side-scrolling. It also has a lot of customization because every weapon has a different like weight and length and speed attached to each of them. So you can have like a rapier that makes your character faster. You can have a giant sword that makes them stronger. Maybe it has higher reach, but it is a lot slower. And it's just a lot of customization of learning how your character plays. And honestly, it's a very solid game to get. It's like $24 to buy the main game, and then it's $10 for the DLC. But the DLC itself will last you for hours, just continuously going in, going to the cave, doing more fights, doing more stuff. It's funny because I was initially just planning on letting myself play for an hour just to see if I could get into like my review mindset again. And I just lost myself and played for like 4 hours. Because it was just that fun.
And that's the beauty of it. That's how I felt about Baldur's Gate. Like, yes, these battles are a struggle, but they're worth it. I know I can win if I just play it the right way and have a little bit of luck, which never works with my rolls, but I try anyway. And then you just get lost in like the characters and the writing, and you know, like that's what games are supposed to be like. Do you hear me, Ubisoft? This is what games are supposed to be like.
Just so listening to you. Yeah, it was really fun that way. It's definitely something you can get lost in, and like I didn't really care too much about the story of finding the heroes. That maybe because I kind of just skipped some of the section of the main game just so I could get to the DLC. So I didn't really get too invested into most of like the guild stuff. I was just more invested in the combat and everything. So the DLC basically just improves the combat. It also adds a lot more spells that you can use. The spell system is pretty cool too. Basically you have a stamina bar. Your stamina bar is used for like fighting, but you can also use it as a type of magic. So you don't have MP. Everything is based off your stamina bar. You start off with zero stamina, but when you start using normal basic attacks, then you can do skills that use stamina, or you can use spells that use stamina. And basically you just have to make sure that you use your combos enough so that you can do basic attacks enough times to get a good skill or a good spell. I basically just, once I got the spell system down, I put like my strongest spell at like the easy to input stats, or I just put like the spell button and then press up and up. And then I can just instantly do my strongest spell kind of a deal, which is fun. Because then I just do a normal combo, do my giant spell, jump back, miss, yeah, don't get hit, go back in for a combo, spell, jump back. And it just turned into like a game. Like I just figured out a good rhythm of how to play the game. And it was just, I don't know, this just felt like a coming home moment of like when you're going back into like a genre that you love. And it's just like, this is why I got into games, to experience just the bliss of combat, of feeling overpowered when you understand the mechanics of the game, when you understand how to overpower yourself, as well as how to get in and out of encounters. But some of these bosses are really tough.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Yeah. Don't get cocky, kid.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I thought I had the rhythm down and just realized, oh, well, now the boss has another arm like that's behind you, so you have to like jump instead of dodge, because if you dodge back, you then get bleed. But if you go too far into the boss, then the boss will just attack you and just make you lose half your health. So you got to be very careful of how you fight some of these bosses. But yeah, so Asleeper Revision, the Cave of Phantom Mist, absolutely worth a buy if you're looking for a good long-term type RPG. It is on the Nintendo Switch as well on PC for those who do have Nintendo Switches only. Yes, it's on there. So it's worth it. It's a very good handheld experience because you could just do like a single like stratum, get all of your stuff done for a single run, go back up, invest your points, and then just like leave it and then go back and you already are back to square one and get just go back into the swing of things. So you don't have to worry about being super overpowered or super understanding of how like the later mechanics work, because you always start at level one whenever you do a run of a stratum. But you just can increase your base stats based on how far you get in the stratum, which makes it the, well, I will give one small explanation. Roguelike and roguelite. This is a roguelite, which means you save a lot of your base stat improvements and stuff when you're done with a run. Roguelike is when everything gets back reverted back to zero, but you may have some extra items you can use. So you may be level one, but now your base stats are still a lot higher, but you can still go back down to like from level one to other levels to get your level back up, but also to help you kind of get back into the swing of the game so you don't have to go straight into, now you have to fight 1,000 enemies at once kind of a deal.
All right.
another game, I mean, I did go back to Kakarot for a little bit because I was helping my friend out figure out some of the things for the World Martial Arts DLC because he's finally doing the Pass 2 DLC. Because he wanted to wait until the pass was done before he bought the DLC. And now that it is, he bought the DLC and is going through it. So he needed some assistance. Since I finished it all, I had to go back in to see what the heck I did. So, it's been a while since I did some of the early DLC, like the World Martial Arts Tournament one. And I think it's the Bardock one that was even before that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to go through and do those, do some of the just getting my mindset back into that so I could help them with it. I help people sometimes.
Yeah. If only you could help Ubisoft. only you could help Ubisoft.
If only.
If only.
And yeah, those are the main two that I played this week.
Okay. William, and remember, we'll talk about the Splatfest during the news.
All right. So yeah. So the aside from Splatoon 3, the other major game is I finally also joined a club of actually beating Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Yay! And
yeah, I'm part of that club now. And yeah, Scott. So yeah, obviously once you see that ending, obviously you are just utterly confused what the heck is going on, but as you slowly digest and obviously see the videos, especially again, shout outs to Easy Allies. I mean, they just released a big special with Maximilian Du for giant spoilers. It's a 3-hour special, by all means check it out if you can. But yeah, that ending, once you like digest it and see like obviously all the connections in the game from the beginning, even from like the teaser trailer of the first game, like it slowly starts to make sense. It's basically the conspiracy meme again. So like, oh, it's connected to that. Or it just could be one big I don't know, just conspiracy theory. Like it doesn't make any sense. It could be true. It could be not.
I mean, had to do a revised script patch to remake to make it fit more in line with the ending of Rebirth.
Yes. Like, I at first, like, why'd I have to go and change the ending of Air? And like, oh, now it makes sense. It's like, okay. Again, no spoilers here at the moment right now. But it's, that ending is, one is just, again, very up to interpretation, and the entire Final Fantasy community board fan base at the moment, even Maximilian and everyone else, like, the developers know what they're doing, I feel like. It's like, yep. Because the fans, they are smart. They are very smart. To the point, like, you try to hide something from the fans, they won't. They will easily figure it out. Like, again, you see it. So, therefore, I feel like the developers is just doing what they're doing right now with this ending, and of course at prepping for the third and final game with they're gonna keep up with the OG, but the same up with that, as Maximin says, 5%, they're gonna mix it up real heavily with the spoilers, but again the whole multiverse theory of it all. So
because
yeah,
we need another multiverse in our lives. Gosh dang you, Marvel!
It is just another rabbit hole in itself. Like for those who play the OG, by all means, like yeah, you're gonna get a lot more. Like as a newbie, I had no idea, but all I just know is everything Final Fantasy VII media, it matters. It matters in this game.
The entire Compendium Collective basically has a role in Rebirth.
From First Soldier to the mobile game. They're doing a Kingdom Hearts thing. They're doing a bloody damn Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
So, this isn't even Nomura's fault.
Not this time. Like, yeah. I do want to note that, and again, I haven't played the game, but I commented on this last week, I think. When you have an ending that confusing, and that you need to watch a 3-hour Maximilian Dude video just to try to understand it, that's not kosher. That's not kosher. Like, and I did this is Nintendo related, but I did another. I did a piece about the Game of Thrones ending today because the director, the showrunners, you know, who are outcast now, as they should be, were like, we kind of expected some backlash, but we didn't expect all of it. It was really jarring. Like, yeah, well, that's what happens when you have a crappy ending and you ruined everything that you helped build. You know?
And like that's the thing. I'm kind of like a bit of a half and half as well. Like, I'll quickly wrap it all in this section, but basically, like, it's not like The Last of Us 2 ending. let's be clear with that. It's definitely not The Last of Us 2 ending. Like, with this ending, like, it is, as you said, it's like, it just, like more or less dumps everything on you to the point it leaves you in confusion. That, I'll give it that. So it has that some similarity. However, with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, this ending at least has some of that build up that, like, okay, I'm so confused. Like, what the heck is this ending? But it then slowly develops, like, okay, you steal it, you connect the pieces, so like, oh, okay, it's starting to, and then you yourself start to connect the dots and all that. So it's not, again, not like a Last of Us 2 ending. It's just like, it shocks you, sure, it shocks you, but at least in Final Fantasy VII's case, it basically like everything, at least it doesn't have that has the wonder of the world, and just, I don't know, at least in the Final Fantasy VII world and universe, it has like a lot more to connect, which, oh, okay, it isn't as jarring. So I'll just leave it at that. But overall, the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, by all means, get it if you have it on PS5. That ending, sure, may not, it will be shocking, it will stump you, but again, like me, let it stew, and perhaps you figure out something. Or again, check out Maximilian Dude and Easy Allies. Again, shout out to you guys. And also as well, right before the podcast, I actually am continuing, almost finishing up a Persona 3 reload, because the reason I've been taking my time with it is because I've been grinding up the diamonds and rubies, because I want to get the Persona, you know what I'm talking about, Scott, the Persona 3 specific materials, the heart items, which, yep, you can get, like, the from Messiah to, like, get the basically the best gear. So I pretty much completed every quest except that last quest, which, if you know that hidden boss, you know that hidden boss. And so I have beaten the Reaper. I'm currently at level 99, so I can easily breeze through the main storyline, no problem. I just kind of want to prepare up to actually try. I'm only in hard mode. I don't want to try merciless mode yet.
Oh yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, but I'm in hard mode. But yeah, like, I want to beat that hidden boss. Because again, I played the original. I've been her in Fest. Her, yes, keyword her. And so it's, I don't know. I feel like it would be just good to finally go back to that game again to, like, beat her one more time, just to make it a trifecta, personally, for me. So yeah, I'm just currently just grinding in materials just to, and basically making my Persona fusion recipes to get ready for that last major Persona, and of course finish up the major social links. So, finishing from that, as well as, of course, naturally, the Final of Heroes, which I gotta say, I am personally very happy, finally. I mean, sure, it is an emblem hero, but it's emblem Ike. And
yes,
it's about bloody time we had an Ike character that is a good Ike. Like, look, look, with all due respect, Todd, you as an Ike fanboy, because, like, the first, again, our first brave legendary hero was legendary Ike. Like, or Brave Ike, whatever. We had a lot of Ikes in the first, like, few years of Fire Emblem Heroes.
Right.
And, like, in hindsight, maybe we should have held it off maybe onto later generations before, when the game improved. And it's only, even with its refined with Legendary Ike, like, with that refined, unfortunately, he struggled, obviously, with the current units, and metas are out there. So to finally have, an updated Ike, especially with Emblem Ike, this Ike alt is like, oh boy, okay, this Ike, I finally bring Ike back to the main spotlight. So I'm happy in regards.
Power creep is real. Like Brave Ike was one of my best units for a while, but then it just became to where he got outmatched. Now I use Rinka as my green unit because she's a boss. And you know, when I saw this Ike, and I saw like how he was like nerfing. Damage.
He's a tanker. He's a tank. The fact he can take out a rearmed Reinhardt, and she was able doing four hits at a time. It's like, eesh. He's a tanker. And Ike is a great Omni tank.
I need it. So
yeah, I believe he'll be coming out later on tonight, if I recall correctly. Yes. So yeah, I'm happy for that.
Uh-huh. All right. And with that, we are going to head to news, because we also had a rather busy news week. So it's time to go down the war pipe. And first, Bloodfest. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the keyboard crew won, and I am happy. I was expecting it to be this definitive, but oh, it was so definitive. And I should have mentioned this in what I've been playing. I apologize, because I honestly forgot, because I was focusing on Karlach. I mean, Baldur's Gate. But I promise you guys, this last Splatfest has been my best Splatfest in a long time. Like, I definitively had more wins than losses in this Splatfest, which I could not say about the last, I don't know, 10 or so. Like, it's been bad. Like, there was ones where I literally started out with a losing streak, where this one I had, like, a 2 losing streak, then I had, like, a 5 winning streak, then I lost one, then I lost my team, and then I went back, and I kept getting winning streaks, and I made it to champion fairly easily. And it was a great time. Then I went into tricolor battle, and I won the first time. I won a couple of times 10 battles. I had a chance at times 100, but I lost, sadly. But yeah, I did my part. I did my part.
Yeah, like in my experience, I'm just very surprised, like how. Like the votes was, and actually surprisingly very balanced. I only had one mirror match, and that was in the open league. Every single time I have opened up a match, it was a different team. So yeah, for once this Splatfest was very balanced. So I had to give props to that. And just a quick rundown on the stats right now. Conch battles pre battle Splatfest, it went to Team Drums. But the vote wise, it went to Team Guitar with 35% of the vote. However, Team Keyboard sweeped the entire cloud base of Open Pro and Tricolor League with an overwhelming sweep, and thus gaining them the win. Is like, okay, fine. In the end, it's balanced. I have to give props, and sadly, I feel like it is definitely down to that skill issue, Dayo. And unfortunately, in my experience, even like I played in more or less the entire day of Saturday and mostly off Sunday, and I reached up to a ruler plus 16. Yes, I am that crazy. Yes,
we know. Will stop boasting. My gosh, like, it's bad enough that you were doing like level 99 in hard mode on Persona 3 Reload. I wasn't even at level like 85 in regular mode, but now it's like, oh, I've only reached ruler plus 16 only.
Only.
And unfortunately, like you, I had some decent wins, but I lost 3 100 times match, which really stunned. So, and I guess that kind of contributed to, again, Keyboard's cloud based winning, because with keyboard they won the open league of 35%, pro league of 37%, and the tricolor with 34%.
You're
so
welcome.
They just complete sweep it with that win. They only had to win is the cloud, and they got 500 points out of it. And even with the new point revamp system of second place votes, it wouldn't even matter. So yeah, that those cloud base really does matter. So in the end, it's a skill issue, and Fry is forever cursed.
She's the Vegeta. Wait, hold on. Okay, so let's go with this comparison. So she's Vegeta. Which one is Goku, Shiver or Big Man?
I want to go with Shiver.
I'm gonna go with Shiver. Okay. Shiver is the easy popular one. I guess he was voice the leader.
So what does that make Big Man?
Piccolo.
No. Come on, make him like Gohan at least, because like. You know, he gets the unexpected wins, right? Like just like Gohan. Like, who thought Gohan was going to beat Cell? or who thought, you know, and then we got Beast Mode Gohan, who is apparently as strong as Ultra Instinct in the latest manga. Okay.
Yeah.
So it was totally not what happened, but you know, we're gonna play it off that way. So at least make him Gohan, because I'm like gentle giant. I mean, I would say Broly, but Big Man's got no rage in him. Come on. He's like anti Broly would probably be small dude. So I mean, then again, I could say that Big Man's Beerus, because he's clearly a god of destruction with all the victories. It's like, it appears I found a worthy foe. So for more on our Dragon Ball Super Compendium and related characters, please go to the Outer Heaven. No. Also, I want to know, I did a passionate Akira Toriyama speech during my Comic-Con recently. Someone made a wood carving of Akira Toriyama, and they were giving away as a raffle prize, and I could tell that the people like weren't getting how great Toriyama was. So while they were doing the auction off or the raffle, I was like, okay, let me spit this for you. This is why Toriyama is so great. I just went on this passionate speech, and I didn't really realize I had my Broly shirt on in that moment, because I was like, look, I'm wearing a Broly shirt right now. That's how much I love Dragon Ball. But I was just like, ladies and gentlemen, he meant so much to us, and he's gone way too soon. So no matter who gets this, please display it proudly, because Toriyama was the man. So
don't scalp it.
Don't you dare. Or we'll send Vegeta after you. It's like, all right. Next up, okay, this was an interesting piece of news that just came out. Sonic the Hedgehog 3 has wrapped filming.
Ooh.
Yeah. Now, for the record, this means they've wrapped filming, like, the movie. They still got to do the VFX and whatever, so we're probably not going to get a trailer for at least a little longer. But in the, the final picture, the wrap-up shot or whatever, we see Jeff Fowler, the director, who's clearly very good at what he does. And he has a picture. I'm serious. The only thing he did wrong was the original Sonic design.
Yeah.
Oh, we think fans are going to love it. Okay, the fans didn't love it. Okay, we're going to change it because the fans didn't love it. Anyway, he has a picture. He has the, what's that word for the, you know, the rolling, you know, that, the clip thing.
I
forgot the term.
I don't know what the term is either.
Anyway, he's holding up a giant, that one, and it has a picture of Sonic, Shadow, Knuckles, and Tails. Also, he has a shirt that says "Keep Calm and Jim Carrey On." So yeah, per the confirmation, he's coming back. So that's very exciting. The movie is scheduled to come out this December, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So that won't have much competition, as there's no superhero movies or Avatar films coming out, or Star Wars. So very interested in that. But now the question is, how long until we know who Shadow's voice actor is?
Right.
Yeah. So, because the leading actors, as dubbed by the internet, are of course Keanu Reeves and Hayden Christensen. Like, yeah, I like that. And then I can do Hayden Christensen. I don't like Sonic. He's fast and irritating, and he goes everywhere. And then he kills all the children. So. Well, then again, technically a child dying is a part of his backstory. So, see, the comparisons are right there, ladies and gentlemen. But Shadow didn't kill Maria. Didn't he, though? Anyway.
Ultimate life form.
Ultimate life form can't save his BFF. Just saying. Isn't that life? So, form. But so that movie's coming out later this year. And then today, a new poster for Knuckles, the spinoff series, came out, and that's coming out on April 26th on Paramount Plus, while Paramount Plus exists, so enjoy it while it's there. You think I'm joking, but they tried to merge and it didn't work, and now I kid you not, I saw another thing today. Y'all know how Warner Brothers Discovery is like shelving shows and trying to like erase them from existence and all that to save money. Well, apparently Paramount Plus did that with two shows. Aww. One called Big Nate, never heard of it, but it was apparently there. And the Rugrats reboot.
Aww.
I know. First of all, you should have rebooted Rugrats. I mean, we all know what happened with Grown Up. So there's a deep cut. I'll grow up with Yeah. It wasn't the worst thing in Nickelodeon.
It had its moments.
I mean, it's about the Rugrats as teens. It's a natural progression. I accept that. Unlike Knuckles with him trying to put the dog against the mailman. Like, no. So, anyway, that's good. So, big day for Sonic fans. Not so big day for Sega.
No,
because Sega is yet the next company to hit the layoff button, but with a small twist. So check this out. So they're laying off 260 people across many offices in Europe, especially the UK. And then they decided, hey, we're going to sell Relic. Who are they selling it to? Relic? Huh? So apparently, much like Toys for Bob, they're going to go independent, I guess, and Sega just allowed the sale to go to themselves.
So, yeah, apparently.
Yay, I guess. I mean, that's one way out.
Yeah.
Get out! So
it's better than being closed.
This is true.
True.
Led to more layoffs, so let me just...
Yeah, that's the big problem is
here,
the layoffs.
Here it is. Sega Europe is laying off 240 workers, and then they sold off Relic Entertainment. So... Not the best of all. So, and again, this is just adding to number. I think at the last count officially was like we're well over 8,000. Yeah, here we go. The number of people laid off in the video game industry in 2024 is at over 8,000, with 10,000 being laid off in 2023. We're gonna break that record. We're gonna do it, Ma. We're gonna keep playing. Okay, that's all. Something to cheer about, obviously. But it's not the best situation, and trying to find out like if there was definitive proof as to why. The Sega of America apparently did layoffs earlier this year, so that's not kosher. So
no.
Sega's like, oh, America, U.S. had some layoffs. Let's go to Europe. Yeah, according to this, Sega Europe was expecting to record roughly 10 million in losses, and related to business restructuring. Okay. Yeah, I remember last year they canceled that game Hyenas from Creative Assembly, and the 250 people lay off there. I'm like, man, so yeah, it's not the best of news. So, but hey, at least you got a Sonic movie. Yeah, and then now this one's a little bit different, but Nintendo of America kind of had layoffs, kind of.
Yeah.
So here's what happened. So Nintendo of America decided that they're going to restructure their testing department within Nintendo of America. And I think I said that weirdly, but whatever. But it's not like they're laying off employees. They're laying off contractors. What's the difference? Well, a contractor is meant to be there for a period of time versus an employee, which is full time until, you know, they potentially get let go or transfer to a new position, whatever. When I worked at Volition, rest in peace, I was technically a contractor. I was there for a few months. I thought I was an intern, but they've hired extra QA testers over time because they need it for a short period of time so they can get their games ready for launch. You hear that, publishers? You need to test your games before they launch.
Sure, there's no issues.
Just in case, you know. Just saying, like there's quadruple A titles that could have used lots more testing. So, and remember, there are bugs even in great games like Baldur's Gate, as I noted earlier. But
yep.
But this is technically not laying off because not only are not all these contractors getting released, some of them are going to be, let's call it, reacquiesced. There's a word. Reacquiesced into their new program and become full-time employees. According to Nintendo of America, quote, we have reorganized our product testing functions to drive greater global integration and game development efforts. The changes will also be better aligned with NOA, with interregional testing procedures and operations. I love the big words. These changes will involve some contractor sentence ending, as well as the creation of a significant number of new full-time employee positions. For all assignments that are ending, the contractor agencies with NOA support will offer severance packages and provide assistance during their transition. For those contractors associates who will be leaving us, we are tremendously grateful for the important contributions they made to our business, and we extend our heartfelt thanks for their hard work and service to Nintendo. In other words, not all of you are getting fired. Some of you are actually going to get better jobs, and those who are leaving, we're going to help you. What a concept!
A company helping the layoffs? No.
Yeah, we're going to help you with your transition. We're going to make sure you have good severance packages and aren't getting screwed like a lot of other companies. Microsoft, Embracer Group.
Tell absolutely that one.
Yeah. We sold Gearbox to Take Two. So, I mean, that's technically a lateral move, but it's, yeah, I guess, a better one. So, yeah. So this technically isn't a layoff. Because against contractors, not really employees. And again, some of them are going to get new jobs anyways. But this is how you handle it. You say, yes, we are letting some people go, but we're going to help you in the transition. And some of you are going to get full-time jobs. So, the beauty of Nintendo. Glory! Glory be to Nintendo! seriously, though. I mean, and the rumor behind the restructuring is that Nintendo is gearing up for the Nintendo Switch successor, because those games are going to be entering their testing phases soon enough, apparently. No
word on the street.
Apparently.
Yeah, I heard the news from Zippo. We all know he's accurate. Gag.
He has a track record of something hits the walls.
Yeah. I'll hit the dartboard eventually and get like a point. But yeah, so I'm not going to count this into Nintendo successor rumors, because this is an actual event that's happening. But the speculation is that because the first party games are winding down, which we can prove via the schedule we have for 2024 so far, they're restructuring so they can be better prepared for the launch of the Switch successor. And if that's the case, okay. Why not get everything aligned so that you can, you know, hit the ground full force for the launch, which, again, they need to hit. They need to switch successor, whatever it is, to be as impactful at launch, period. So, make it so. Do it. But again, not layoffs. Sega was layoffs. This is true restructuring. So that's the other thing. It's like, oh, we're restructuring, but you're laying off like hundreds of people. Yeah, that's part of the restructuring. No, this is a restructuring. We're redesigning things. We're getting new jobs. And yes, some people will be let go, but we're helping them on the way out. That's a restructuring. Okay. Everything else was layoffs in the name of restructuring, and that's why we hate the Embracer Group. So,
yeah.
Oh, it's all pulled to the business. I don't know why I'm doing this accent for them. It sounds too good even for them. I got it.
This is a restructuring. We are not evil in any way. I don't care that I sound like Trigon from Teen Titans. Transition our workers from one place to the other. So decrease, Trigon, devourer of worlds.
I actually did do an audition as a Trigon today. So I was busting out my Kevin Michael Richardson.
So you are the insects who have befriended my daughter.
I think I was pretty good. I think I was pretty good. Thank you.
Sounds pretty good to me.
Thank you. I do think I can do voices. I really do. I don't just bust them out because I feel I sound amazing. I do feel I can do some good ones. I do. All right. Speaking of good ones, let's talk Paper Mario. No, it's not out yet. Sorry. I wish it was.
Not yet. It's coming.
That's the one game that could pull me away from Karlach. So, well, okay, we all know that's not true, because I totally played Persona 3 and Ace Attorney, but still. for right now. But no, they reanimated the intro sequence, the storybook intro, the ahem today. I love that that's how it starts out. Like, ahem. Like, are you not paying attention? Pay attention now. So, and a lot of people were impressed by it. They're like, oh yeah, it looks fully animated now. It looks better. Like, I don't know. I guess I just haven't seen the intro in a while, so I guess I would need to compare. But people are
it looks like they're putting actual investment into this remake.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, try to make sure it's even better than the original, which is supposed to be the point.
Yeah, like, I'm thankfully, it seems like they definitely put in the effort of, like, making it prettier, that's for sure. In my recent track record with Nintendo, like, their recent remakes, like, all that, like, I don't know. I feel like it hasn't been kind of as what they should have been doing. So now they're with Thousand Year Door, they know that this is the game they have to really impress upon and actually make an effort. Is okay. Some promise. So, I mean, where were you in the last few games? But okay.
Yeah. So I don't know. Here's the thing. the question isn't about how to make it prettier. It's about how pretty can you make paper? Like, that's really the question here. Because if you really think about it, if you look at how Paper Mario, the character, has evolved visually across, let's just go from the N64 to the Wii U, it hasn't exactly changed a lot, you know, because it's paper. It's Paper Mario. That's the joke.
Yep.
So, like, how pretty can you make the paper? Now, I mean, the effects you can make prettier, like the stage, the battle stage, which we talked about last week because of the pre-order bonus, which please let that come to Nintendo of America, because I will make Keith get that for me. I will display it proudly next to my Amiibos and various other geek memorabilia. Where would I put it on my dresser? Never mind. But, like, how pretty are they going to make it? I guess we'll find out when we see, like, the first true trailer. Because the teaser trailer, I don't think, showed us that much. I mean, you could tell some visual improvements, like with the Hooktail battle and all that. But we'll have to wait for the full result to see. But hopefully we'll get more of these as we get to the closer to the launch, which is in May. So be ready. Oh, could you say this may be prettier? Maybe. May fly.
All right, we still have one more month before we can do that meme again. We still have one more month to do.
It's going to be May. I'm counting on you, Will. Okay, let's see. Actually, let me check my calendar really quick. It'll be May 2nd. So there you go. Be ready, Will, for that day. So, all right. Next up is, ladies and gentlemen, we here at the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast do like to give public service announcements when possible. Why? Because we care about you, the listener. And you might recall that a few weeks back, I did a very real story about a very real police department near me and how they were really, really idiots of how they did certain things with their flyers. I told my parents that story, and even they couldn't believe it. My dad played Call of Duty once upon a time. He actually really liked it. He couldn't figure out how to drive at times, but I will leave that to your imagination. also, I kid you not, when he played in the living room on my PS2, he refused to sit on the floor. So he grabbed a chair and put it on the carpet. And he
that
sat.
Is a choice.
That is my dad, ladies and gentlemen. That is my father. But no, this time we're not talking about a local police officer. We're going to talk about one from Japan. So, do you guys remember a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away when a couple police officers went into this house for a whatever assignment, then they discovered that there was a Nintendo Wii and they decided to play it not knowing they were on camera? Remember that?
Yep.
Okay, This is the sequel to that, but in a much more hilarious way. So, apparently, in Japan, in the Tenri police station, there was an officer who would go into the break room while on duty when there were, quote, few incidents, end quote, going on, and he would play the Nintendo Switch instead of working. So, let me repeat that. He was playing the Nintendo Switch in the PlayStation's break room while on duty. So not on his lunch break, not when he had like some spare moments or at the end or beginning of the day. He was doing it instead of being on the job when he knew there would be, quote, few incidents, end quote. And he played this over the course of a few months for only about 17 hours. But think about that. That's 17 hours he's not on the job. 17 hours he's not, you know, protecting and serving, outside of serving his self-interest by probably getting a new island built in Animal Crossing. We cannot confirm he played Animal Crossing, but let's be honest, that would be one he'd play in the police break room. Now, how did he get caught? Well, he left the Switch on.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. His bosses were doing an audit or something, and they went into the break room and realized the Switch was still on. So they found out that he had done 17 hours, and not only was he reprimanded, he was going to get a dock and pay for those 17 hours. And anyone who works any meaningful job knows that you don't want 17 hours of your paycheck going away.
No.
Yeah.
So, what's our PSA today? If you're a police officer, do not play video games while on the job.
Yeah. This is kind of slightly hitting close to home personally, because I actually have played the Switch at my workplace as well, but thankfully it wasn't as reprimanded as harshly. But
so you got caught.
Yeah. I mean, they know that I have a Switch, but like, thankfully it wasn't as reprimanded as harshly as much.
That's
but
hilarious.
Yeah, like when you do like a federal job like that, yeah, when you do have to, I don't know, protect the public safety, that's a bit more serious.
Yeah. And again, this was during time he was on duty. If he was doing this during his lunch break, you know, playing it in portable mode, oh, lunch is over, time to go put it up, this wouldn't be a story. But he was playing it on duty when there were few incidents going around. Here's the thing, though. Few doesn't mean none. Okay? And if even one of those incidents could have been de-escalated or prevented because that guy was on duty, that makes it really bad that this happened. He's lucky he didn't get fired. Let's just put it that way, because he decided to play video games instead of, you know, helping people. And this is Japan. They're a country that's supposed to be more about helping people and making really weird anime, but that's, we're not going to get into that right now. I've found out many more weird animes because of YouTube recently. I'm just like, who makes this stuff? Japan.
Your algorithm is now busted, isn't it?
It just keeps getting weirder, Scott. I keep finding this weird stuff here. I won't go into details, but Will, have you ever heard of one called Chained Slave?
Dude, that's pretty much one of the highlights of the season.
Okay. Also, I saw a new clip for Tales of the Wedding Rings, which is I only know about because of Square Enix, because they're publishing it. So I'm like, okay, this is like, it's so weird. How many harem animes can you make? Let's find out. Japan, I'll take that challenge.
And also, as a fun trivia as well, apparently the term isekai is officially in the Oxford Dictionary today. Yes!
I heard that! And you know what? I approve of that, because it is not just a word that we throw around anymore. It's a genre that has become infinitely popular. And it's something that is going to keep growing. So it should be a term that we recognize
and,
on a regular basis.
Yes, and also, just for casuals out there, Frieren is not an isekai. It's a straight-up fantasy.
Yes.
Know the difference.
Yeah, isekai is a person getting taken from, like, our world and thrown into a fantasy, magical, sci-fi realm, whatever. You know, a person out of time or whatnot, you know. They're having...
You know, Studio Ghibli or, I don't know, I don't know, Space Jam.
Or, wait for it. Let's go even further back. Wizard of Oz. I mean, Wizard of Oz, I mean, girl from Kansas shows up in a mystical land full of dwarves.
Dream
witches.
World. Dream-wise.
Yeah, dream-wise. Well, I mean, it was a real world. Let's be honest. It was real. So, but yeah, like, isekai is, you know, like, one of us getting thrown into a magical world and say, hey, go have fun. Try to survive. Don't get a harem. Actually, you probably would want the harem, let's be honest, right, Will? So, but you know, I'm proud. I'm proud that isekai has gotten mentioned, and ironically, I have not made it. Actually, hold on. I technically have made an isekai, my home series, because I take a girl and throw into a mystical world of knights and monsters. So yeah, I have made an isekai. I'm proud of myself. Wow, this is like, I am. I mean, it's anime-esque. I mean, come on. So anyway, but what were we talking about? Oh, Japan's police officers. Please don't.
Yes.
Yes. And also, I just remembered another story. Remember there was that story we did? I think Scott was before Scott's time, but there was a police officer who got like suspended because he was playing Pokemon Go on the job.
Yes, I remember
this
that.
This keeps
one.
Happening. Now, what's the real problem here? Let's dive into this deeper. Is it that people like police officers are just bored at their jobs and want to play video games? Or is it that companies like Nintendo make video games so great that they are willing to risk not doing their jobs and play video games instead? I think it's the latter. It's like, this is such a great game. I could play Animal Crossing all day. I know. That's why Nintendo started the pandemic. So, but please, whether you're a police officer, a retail person, whatever, don't play video games on the job when you're expected to do something. You're going to get in trouble. The games will be there when you have the free time. And yes, it may be a while for you to get that free time. I know that better than you might think. I really do. But don't risk your job. Don't risk your livelihood. Don't risk your family's livelihood. Potentially, I don't know if this police officer was married or not. But, you know, don't do that. Be better, please. We've got enough problems without police officers, you know, not doing their jobs because they're playing video games. I love that police officers play video games. Just don't do it on duty. Okay? Thank you. All right, okay. We go from a PSA to a rant. Are you ready, gentlemen?
I'm ready.
We're talking about Pokemon Horizons now.
Here we go.
All right, now I'm going to talk start with positive news. Okay. Let me revise. Potential positive news. The cast of the Japanese cast of Pokemon Horizons recently did a panel at a con, and they noted that they are ready to do the next Pokemon movie. Like, they want a Pokemon movie set within the Horizons timeline. I'm fine with that, potentially. They obviously need to have more time. Like, this should not be something that happens in the next year, all right? Because, like, think about it. When they did Pokemon the first movie, that was when they were near the end of the first season. Because remember, that's when they had the Giovanni Gym battle.
Yep.
That was all the way at the end of the first season.
So yeah, it helped tie into it too.
Exactly. That is, like, literally, canonically, the only Pokemon movie that technically is canon. And I know what you think. Like, what do you mean by that? Well, if you actually look at, like, Pokemon 2000 on, they don't act as canon because certain things happen, or Ash doesn't remember meeting these Pokemon. And case in point, Ash meets a Lugia in the TV show and acts like he doesn't know Lugia, even though he was defined as the chosen one by Lugia in Pokemon 2000. He's also met the legendary dogs multiple times, and yet doesn't react as much when he meets them at times. Mewtwo is the only one who canonically he recognizes, and that happened again in Pokemon Journeys. And that Mewtwo talked, which further highlights that it's the same Mewtwo. So, yeah, that's the only one that's canon. Now, do I want a Pokemon Horizons movie? Not unless the quality improves in the TV show.
Yeah.
I finished the first 12 episodes of Pokemon Horizons, and I wrote my review, and I gave it a 2.5 out of 5, and I might have been too generous. I mean, I think that at least 0.5 of that was because of Captain Pikachu, who is awesome. I think 1 star was because of the animation, which is overall rather beautiful. And there were some other characters that did well. Like, they did a really great job with Nimona. Bless her, you know. Karlach, Nimona, Aisha Clan, right in there. Those are my types, if you want to know. Yes, I have a thing for Catwoman. Just never mind. I was going to get out of joke here, but I won't. I read another thing recently. I saw a Catwoman. Like, that looks like Aisha. And then she actually like Aisha. I'm like, oh, isn't she beautiful? So, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah. The overall plot was just, at times, completely nonsensical. They contradicted each other. The episodes contradicted one another at times in ways that just don't make sense. They tried to do the whole, hey, we're seeding a whole bunch of mysteries and you're going to find that out over time. That only works if you have a weekly episodic show, not a batch 12, and then, hey, you have to wait 3 months until the next one's localized. I've always had this problem with Netflix. I do not like that they're doing, here's 12 episodes, wait 3 months, here's another 12 episodes, wait 3 months, because by that point, I either don't care or I have to try and remember what all was revealed. And hashtag, nothing gets revealed. Okay? Like, I literally listed out I had a whole paragraph in my Pokemon Horizons review. Like, why did this happen? Why did this happen? Why did this happen? Why did this person do this? Why did this person do this and not this? Why did this person do this instead of this, this, and this? And I screamed at the end, I don't know! Yeah, and you guys know the meme that Ash's mom is terrible? You know that meme?
Kinda.
Okay. Well, there's a section of the Pokemon fan base that believes that Ash's mom is terrible because, you know, she willingly let Ash go out on her journey, which is stupid. Like, I don't get that logic. And then there's, of course, the belief that her and Professor Oak have a relationship, which is just so mean. Even Epic Rap Battles of History did a line about that was hilarious. But no, Delia, Ash's mom, has always loved Ash. She's always been there for Ash. You can actually see it in Pokemon 2000 where she's so happy that her son saved the world and all that. And then he goes on a journey to save his mother in Pokemon 3, Tower of the Unknown, and all that. But in this series, we meet Liko's mom, who hires the Rising Volt Tacklers, who we still know very little about, to bring Liko home. Why does she want Liko home? We don't know. And then when she does get home, she's not there to see her own daughter.
She's the heck?
Gone. And then she's like, oh, well, she's really busy. I'm like, yeah,
then
okay.
Why do you care?
Exactly, but that's another good point. But, like, the question is, like, I played it off because, like, okay, there are people with, let's be honest, there are people with busy parents, busy jobs, you know, late hours and all that. And I'm like, I wonder what she does. And then Liko reveals, oh, she's a school teacher.
What?
That's it? That's it? And then she willy-nilly meets Freed, the head of the Volt Tacklers, and he goes, oh, do you want to go see Liko while you're here? And she goes, nah.
Oh my gosh.
And she just walks away. She goes, nah. I'm like, I'm sorry, Delia is a bad mother? You just dragged your daughter from Kanto to Paldea for no apparent reason. Literally, there's no real reason given. And now you're just like, you know what? She's yours. You can take her. I don't need to see her. Like, what the fork, lady? What the fork? So, and then there's just so many much weirdness. And then ironically, it was the last episode that things started to look interesting, and then they just ended it. Like, it's like they give a big clue about the Black Rayquaza and everything, which in itself is kind of contradictory, but I'm going to let that go for now, because like there should only be one Rayquaza and it shouldn't be shiny, but I'll let it go. I'll let it go for now. Because remember, last week we said that Ash is technically in that same Pokemon world, and this is the same Pokemon world that Liko and Roy are in. But anyway, so there should only be one Rayquaza. But, you know, it has potential, but it's just they're not focused enough on the right things, and then they take way too long to do other things. Like, for example, I looked up the first 12 episodes of the original Pokemon series. All right? Do you want to know what happens in those first 12 Pokemon episodes?
What?
Hold on. I thought I had it. Pokemon first season episodes. There you go. But yeah, there you go. Indigo League. It's weird hearing it called the Indigo League when we didn't call it that as kids. It was specifically just Pokemon. Anyway.
Yep. So
in the first 12 episodes, Ash gets Pikachu, meets Misty, catches multiple Pokemon, Caterpie and Pidgeotto, Squirtle, Charmander, Bulbasaur. That was all in the 12 episodes. He challenges multiple gyms. He meets up multiple trainers that has multiple Pokemon battles with them. And he helps out other people in the process. All by this point, we know Ash's character to a T. Yes, the 12th episode is when he catches Squirtle. So by that point, he's got six Pokemon. He's got multiple. He's got two gym badges because he's beaten Brock and Misty's sisters. Technically, he beat Misty, but and so on and so forth. At the end of Pokemon Horizons, it took three episodes to get Liko ready. It took three episodes to get Roy on board. It took multiple episodes just to get to Paldea. Then they get to Paldea, and all sorts of weirdness happens. And then at the end, then they have a two-part ending episode, kind of, where they have like this really odd cliffhanger. They had so many episodes end on like the worst cliffhangers. Like, it wasn't even cliffhangers. It was really like a character says a sentence and then the episode ends.
That's fun of those.
I know. And it's like they end so weirdly, and then it's just like, wait a minute, why would you end it there? And like the final episode kind of had a decent ending, I guess, but it wasn't like, ooh, I can't wait to see what happens when it returns. It's like, no, I'm fine with waiting. I don't mind. I'll wait the 3 months. But and then there's like the dialogue is so weird. Oh, and I really wish Falcon Faith was here because I wanted to shatter her world. I have a single sentence that will shatter her existence entirely, which I'm kind of glad she's not because she's having a rough time. So fans, please send positive thoughts of Falcon Faith. But I'll say it to you two guys, and I want you to be fake outraged in honor of Faith. Okay, can you do that for me, guys, please?
Sure.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Faith, or you two in this case, I just want you to know that in Pokemon Horizons, Frigatito freaking sucks.
No.
Yes, it's true. Frigatito is the freaking worst. All right, like they try and mimic the whole, you know, Ash and Pikachu dynamic with the whole, you know, Sprigatito doesn't listen to Liko at first, and then she does, and then she doesn't, and then she does. And it's just this Pokemon has freaking mood swings at the wazoo. It's acting like an actual cat, all right? Like, and it's not. It's supposed to be a Pokemon cat, so get in the dang Pokeball. And that's the thing. Like, it refuses to get into the Pokeball, which is totally a Pikachu thing. Like, you don't need to repeat that, but okay. And then it has these mood swings that don't even make sense within the context of the storyline. Case in point, the Explorers, still a terrible name for the bad guys. They kidnap Sprigatito to, you know, hold it as ransom so they can get Liko's pendant. Why? We don't know. Or I don't know, I suppose. And yes, Liko does say that throughout the first 12 episodes. I even made a drinking game, and I was like, you're going to be drunk by the end. I promise you. 12 episodes, you're going to be drunk every time she says, I don't know. But so the Explorers kidnap Sprigatito. And then Liko obviously comes to save her. But before that point, one of the Explorers straight up falls in love with Sprigatito. Okay? And it's like feeding Sprigatito a lot. And Sprigatito is digging it. All right. Like she totally, this Sprigatito is she totally digs it. She's like, even like, you know, rubbing the leg of the explorer person. And of course, that makes her go even more goo goo gaga for the Pokemon and all that. And then Lika comes in and saves it. And then the explorer goes, no, Sprigatito is supposed to be with me. And Sprigatito's like, nah. I'm like, you bitch. And then a few episodes later, when Lika returns to her house, Fido, the you know the little bread Pokemon.
Yeah.
It which is specifically stated by Liko to be her dad's Pokemon, comes and greets her because obviously this Pokemon knows Liko for a long time, and Sprigatito gets jealous.
What?
It's not her Pokemon. Like it straight up gets jealous, climbs all over the house, refuses to get into the Pokeball. Liko straight up leaves it at the house, which is so dumb because wouldn't it want to go back to the Rising Volt Tackler's place because that's its home? It's totally convoluted. And then it fixes itself after like just talking with Fido. Okay. And then comes and saves Liko, and they have this big memorable moment. I'm just like, there's no connection there. It's not like when Ash intentionally decided to leave Pikachu with the Village of Pikachus. Remember that?
Yeah.
Like, that was heartfelt, because it's like, you know, I want you to be happy, and you're clearly happy with this Pikachu, you know, horde. A horde of Pikachus. Team Rocket's dream, obviously. And laugh. I mean, let's be honest, it is. And then Pikachu comes up and runs back to Ash. It's like, no, we're going to be together forever. You know, like that beautiful song. I won't sing it, don't worry.
It's such a heartfelt moment.
That was a heartfelt moment, but this was just like, no, Sprigatito's being a brat. And it's just, no. Sprigatito's the worst. Okay?
A very angry puss.
Mm. I think you can add a few letters to that, but yes. Come on, that was a good joke. Come on. Anyway. So, yeah, clearly and here's the worst one. Here's the worst one for me. There is a specific episode where Captain Pikachu is a total boss, but Liko and Roy decide, hey, let's do some Pokemon training. We need to get better in battle because of the Explorers. Like, totally fine. They do, hands down, the worst Pokemon battle ever. Period. Even though, in the literal previous episode, they defeat the Explorers on their own, are in tune with their Pokemon, and are using moves very efficiently, and then here they can't even land a move on each other, and their Pokemon just give up.
Wow,
it's bad. Like, remember last week when I was talking about that one time where Sprigatito literally just unleashes a leaf storm that encompasses like the entire Voltak
airship?
Couldn't even do that against Fuecoco, and then Fuecoco's fire couldn't burn the leaves. But apparently, its Ember attack, an Ember attack, could totally roast a Rhydon.
What?
Make
the
that
inconsistency.
Make sense. Beyond inconsistency. It's infuriating. It's so infuriating. And yes, I'm showing my nerd card. Okay, I get it. This is supposed to be the anime. The anime, you know, bends the rules all the time. But this is a, like, let's be generous, level 5 Fuecoco going up against a fully evolved, not fully evolved, but like evolved Rhydon, and Ember roasts it. A single Ember attack. In fact, it was the first Ember attack that Fuecoco ever did. And it roasted the Rhydon. Are you kidding me? So, look, and again, watch Pokemon Horizons yourself. Maybe you'll enjoy it more than I did. And I hear that the later episodes do get better. I hope so, because this is such a rough start. Like, I almost called the subtitle A Rough Start to a New Journey, but this one I decided to make it, we'll explain later, because that's the entire concept of the show. Hey, here's something, we'll explain later. Here's something, we'll explain later. Here's something, we'll explain later. They never explained later!
Gonna do so much setup, you don't know what you're watching.
Yeah, here's the thing. Freed literally said, hey, Liko, your mom hired us to come get you home. Like, wait, my mom hired you to take me home? Like, yeah, I'll explain it later. He never explains it later. Never. And then we still don't find out. They make like a vague reference to her pendant, but then like, if you wanted the pendant, you could have just asked to keep it before, you know, she went off to Kanto. And you're the ones who sent her to the Kanto. You agreed, hey, go to Kanto. You have a new adventure there. And then it's like, no, like literally, they said there's like only a couple weeks span between the first episode and when we return to Paldea, or I guess go to Paldea. And it's like, no, apparently that was long enough for them to hire a completely random group of people to fetch their daughter and return home. Oh, okay.
Somehow.
Optum. And yes, they do. And for those who watch the show, yes, I know there is a connection between Liko's mom and Freed. That's not enough, though. That's not enough to say, hey, can you go on your airship and go get my daughter back? Instead of like, oh, I don't know, calling your daughter and telling her to come home. Because canonically, at that point in time, she was on break. She was on break from the school, the academy she was at. And she goes, oh, I don't, my parents are busy, I don't need to go home. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. That's actually pretty fair. And then it's like, no, we need you to come home now. Like, okay.
That's now, wonky.
I know. It's so, I mean, if you guys watch it, I'm not forcing you to. I'm forcing you to, dang it. I want you to watch and agree with my opinions. I was so hyped. I'm like, okay, this is a new Pokemon adventure. We're going to have a new journey. It's going to be a new feel. And it does. It does have a different feel. Just because it's different doesn't mean it's good.
Yeah.
Again, I refer back to Avatar: Last Airbender Birdo versus Legend of Korra. You know, they had a huge job of making Korra and her world seem different and interesting and have a different vibe. And issues with seasons 2 and 4 aside, season 1 nailed it. You know, hey, this is Republic City. This is where you fit in as the Avatar. You're a fully grown up Avatar with 3 elements instead of 1 at the beginning like Aang was. You know, totally different personality, different crew. It worked. This doesn't work. It's convoluted. They contradict each other all the time. And it's just like, what are they trying to accomplish? And then again, by the end of 12 episodes, they only kind of move forward. Kind of. It's weird. Yeah. Rant over. Let's move on. I didn't mean for it to go that long, but I was just like, once you start the rant mobile, you can't.
Just have to get it off your chest.
Very much so. All right. Let's see what's next. We have Legend of Zelda movie. So no specific new details. However, the director of it, who is the man behind the upcoming Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. There we go. This is the wording. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes movie. Such a long title. Wes Ball. He said, "Quote: I have this awesome idea. I've been thinking about it for a long freaking time of how cool a Zelda movie would be. I want to fulfill people's greatest desires. I know it's important, this Zelda franchise. To people and I, we want it to be a serious movie, a real movie that can give people an escape. I want to live in that world. That's the thing I want to try and create. It's got to feel like something real, something serious and cool, but fun and whimsical." End quote.
Okay.
Okay, I know that sounds as convoluted as Pokemon Horizon's plot, but when I read this is passion. This yes. guy is clearly passionate about the movies, and if you think about it, that is what Zelda is. It's serious and cool, but it's also fun and whimsical. I mean, let's not forget you can attack chickens and get swarmed by cuckoos.
Yes, yes.
They are the biggest and hardest villains in the game.
Indeed. You can go from, oh, I need to, you know, go save Princess Zelda to, hey, I need to collect 100 crickets so I can help this guy get with this gal. That's a real quest in Breath of the Wild, you know, or hey, I need to go cooking. Let's see what kind of meal I can make, or I need to go capture this giant golden horse. Like, that's the wonder of this. And he also said, you remember before, he's like, hey, I want to make like a live action Miyazaki film, which is bold. We admitted that, but it gives a vision. He clearly wants to do something special here, and I'm for that. And if he can pull it off, then great. And if not, well, we're going to roast him worse than M. Night Shyamalan during the Last Airbender movie. Because remember, he was passionate about it too. And he even said, my kids will kill me if I screw up that movie. And yet, Shyamalan is still alive. Somehow.
Yes.
Somehow.
And he says, like, I believe the quote from his words is basically said, live action is pretty hard to do. Fast forward of a Netflix series that actually did pretty darn well.
Yeah, it's not for everyone. That's just the truth. You can't adapt everything.
No.
That's just the truth. There are some series that legitimately and fairly will not be perfectly replicated. And that's okay. Now, sometimes you need to try, and that's just the truth, but that's why we're worried about this, because, frankly, this is a hard one to get right in live action, especially since, wait for it, Link doesn't talk!
Okay. Yeah.
Technically, he technically doesn't talk. He actually does, but we never hear his voice. Outside of that, you know.
Yeah, and the fact that this movie is going to be the first ever movie that's going to be with Zelda property, so you got one shot. And yeah, this will be forever the history and staple down the line. So I don't know, like, can it be like a Mario movie success? Maybe, but yeah, you get one shot at this. Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes. And again, they're still very, very early in the process. In fact, there's no script. They only have Wes Ball attached and Miyamoto overseeing it, and another guy. I'm sorry, I don't remember his name. But Wes is going to finish up Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. It's such a weird title.
Yes, it is.
It's like, I keep wanting to say Planet of the Kingdom of the Apes. Like, that's not right. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. And then he's going to go into, take like a little break, and then he's going to go into the Zelda movie. So we're not going to see this until 2026, 27 at the earliest. Like, let's just be honest here. So he's got time to refine his vision. But hey, I do hope that his passion carries through. We shall see. All right, next up we have, we're going to keep with the Zelda news, because at GDC 2024, which was, again, full of news, I hope you got to look at most of it. Senior director Takuhiro Dota, sound programmer Junya Osada, and physics programmer Takuhiro Takayama talked about Tears of the Kingdom and what it was like trying to make the bloody game. And unsurprisingly, the biggest problem was actually trying to make the physics work. Because think about it, they had to make it so that everything the players wanted to do could work. All right. So, for example, Takayama said, when I first saw the prototype, I was excited this was going to be a great game, but this was going to be very, very difficult. I said to myself, are we really doing this? Then he talked about the, quote, glitchy prototypes. And so they would give them out, and then he would hear, quote, I would hear things like, it broke, it went flying, and I'd respond with, I know, we'll deal with it later. Isn't that always the way?
Yes.
Yeah. And so, ironically, what they had to do to fix this problem is they literally made it so everything mattered physics-wise. They didn't say, like, okay, you don't matter to physics, you don't matter to physics. They made, like, everything possible matter to physics. And then they just built up from there. And clearly, they did a good job. So, I mean, if we're going to be honest, the Korok's physics was broken because I couldn't just fling them into outer space on a whim. But, you know.
Yeah, they had gravity affect them.
They had gravity.
Like, how dare they?
We all know they don't have souls. They're not weighed down. So, they had your sound effects, too. Here's my lightsaber. I literally had a friend tell me, like, they should just stop making lightsaber sound effects, just have you do it. I'm like, well, thank you. But yeah, I can only imagine. Like, remember, this game took a while to release, and they delayed it multiple times to make sure that it was good. A good game at launch. A great game at launch.
How dare they?
How dare they try to do right by the gamers instead of rushing out to try and get sales? How dare?
How dare?
Integrity, ladies and gentlemen. Integrity. Speaking of not having integrity, let's talk about Phil Spencer. All right, we're going to do this one quickly because I do want to get to the main event. But Phil once again opened his mouth and inserted his foot, because in an interview with Polygon, he talked about why he thinks the real problem with the layoffs is the lack of industry growth. Ahem. Quote, I'll say the thing that has me most concerned for the industry is the lack of growth. And when you have an industry that's projected to be smaller next year in terms of players and dollars, and you get a lot of publicly traded companies are in the industry that have to show their investors growth, because why else does somebody own a share in someone's stock if it's not going to grow? The side of the business that then gets scrutinized is the cost side, because if you're not going to grow the revenue side, then the cost side becomes challenged, end quote.
Ha.
I look, legitimately, I can kind of see what he's going for there, because the big problem, as we noted last week because of Larian Studios head Sven Venke, our hero, is that, you know, greed is the biggest downfall of the gaming industry right now, because everyone's trying to do more with less, or trying to get the big sales without putting in the work, when that's not how it's supposed to go. But to say that it's not working because of industry growth is a problem with me, because you're causing it not to grow. You, Phil Spencer, you, Microsoft, you, Ubisoft, you, Embracer Group, you know, you who keep trying to say, like, oh, these games are going to be bigger than better than ever, and then they're not, and then they don't sell well. Like, oh, clearly this is an industry problem. No, it's a you problem. It's a you problem. It's you trying to do this, that, and the other thing without putting in the effort, without putting in the work, without considering the gamers, only considering the shareholders. Trust me. Yes, shareholders want growth, but they also know that if things go wrong, they're not going to get their growth. That's why they're investors. They're investing over the long term. This isn't like the GameStop situation where they're buying in to sell high and make millions and then have the stock market screw them again. It's not that kind of thing.
No, it's not.
So, I don't know, this just ticks me off. And then as Scott was telling me, Xbox Game Pass is starting to screw the industry because they're focusing more on getting AAA titles to Game Pass instead of the indie titles to Game Pass, which means that indie devs aren't getting a good shake of things, which is hurting the industry overall. So
yeah, which it is sad because especially earlier on in like the Xbox 360 era, that was one of the big reasons why Xbox 360 took off is because they had such a good indie scene.
Yeah. So it just ticks me off because if it's not the Embracer Group, if it's not Phil Spencer, if it's not Sony, it's someone trying to give a half-act response, yes, I said half-act, deal with it, response as to why the layoffs are happening. We know why the layoffs are happening. You're trying to reach this impossibly high level. You're expecting your dev teams to work an insane amount of hours to get that done. Then they get the game out, and it either does well, but not well enough, or it doesn't do well at launch, and everyone's pointing the blame at everyone else but the heads of the publishers or the studios. And then the layoffs happen, and it's like, oh, well, we had to lay them off. No, you didn't have to lay them off. You could have cut your paycheck. You could have done more responsible things. You could have done like what Sven Venke does, and take your gosh dang time, you know? But no, you wanted to rush things out, and it backfired on you again. And it's going to keep backfiring on you again if you don't change your ways, which again is why we praise Nintendo more times than not, because when was the last first party game that was this levels of this, like Redfall levels of broken? Like even Pokemon Scarlet and Violet can't say that. It was glitchy as heck, but you could beat the game.
You could beat it, indeed.
You could beat it. Again, most people agree it was a great game, but it was just glitchy as all heck, and that's why I gave it a 4 out of 5. But it wasn't one where I'm like, oh, these glitches are preventing me from playing it. I never had that feeling. It was weird at times, you know, and I was like, when Scott wanted to play co-op with me, I'm like, is this going to work? And it actually worked flawlessly, more or less. You know, disappearing ride Pokemon aside, of course. But it just ticks me off. It's like, oh, this is about industry growth. No, it's not about industry growth. It's about you all putting, you know, inordinate amounts of money into games that don't hold up to the money that were put into them. Like, say, Avatar, Frontiers of Pandora.
Yeah, Frontiers of Pandora. Yeah.
Skull and Bones, Redfall, Starfield, you know. And then they're like, well, you know, it's weird that this response is happening. It's like, no, it's not weird. You didn't do your dang jobs. And I know Starfield because of the GDC story we talked about last week about them not even having the time to finish their freaking main plot line and having hit a panic button to bring in emergency help. That should not have happened for a game that took 8 years to make.
Really shouldn't have.
Yeah. So the point is, stop blaming everyone but yourselves. And don't even blame the shareholders because they don't want to see layoffs because they know that'll hurt their investment. They want to see you do big things, good things, and then watch their investments grow. That's why it's called investing. We know there's going to be high spots, that there will be low spots, and there will be points where growth is minimal at best. But you keep believing, and you keep saying, like, you know, okay, we're going to keep trying with this company, and then hope they have that big breakthrough. Nintendo is an excellent example of that. They were sky high with the Wii. They made bad choices with the Wii U, and then the Switch brought them to record heights. And remember, they're the most profitable company in Japan.
Yep.
Just saying. Alright, second rant over. We will now move to our main event, which is a very special one because we decided that in lieu of the arrival of Princess Peach Showtime, which is only her second solo game ever, we thought, hey, what other, let's call them B-tier. Yes, I'm calling Princess Peach B-tier because she's always been a supporting character, not really a main character until these two titles, or DS1 and the Switch one. What B-tier characters either need a new game, should get a reboot of their franchise, or just needs to have a second chance happen with Nintendo. And there are actually some interesting options. So, gentlemen, let's be game makers. I'm actually going to go first because we were pondering this before the show, like how many characters can we reasonably talk about? And because of our time constraints, we're only going to do one apiece. So I'm going to go right for the jugular. It's time to bring back the Ice Climbers.
Alrighty.
Yeah, and I know. I'm like, that's not the obvious choice, but that's what makes it so brilliant. Because think about it. When Ice Climbers came out, the whole point was literally just to climb the glacier, right? It was like a glacier or an ice mountain or something.
Yeah,
like
platformer, glacier. Yeah.
Yeah, and the whole point was like to not get caught by the bottom, right? Like the level slowly rises. You need to, you know, use what were the Ice Climbers' names?
Popo and Nana.
Yeah, I know they had names because they're Smash Brothers. Yeah, Popo and Nana, and you need to work together to make that happen. So, first off, co-op game. Boom. Like, instant. Like, I'm talking like It Takes Two style co-op game. All right. And you need to work together with your partner to get up the mountain. And, but then they channel like a little bit of Celeste and make it like really difficult platforming. So you need to, again, work as a team, solve puzzles, get through certain obstacles together. And then if you really wanted to make it special, you throw in like roguelike or roguelite. I don't know which one would apply here. But you make it to where they try and climb up the mountain, and then if they do get up that mountain, they start all the way back at the bottom, but it's an entirely new mountain. Every mountain climb is different. And it's just, you could do like easy procedural generation. This will be like the easiest form of it. You have like 50 different kinds of obstacles and platforms and such, and enemies, because there were enemies in Ice Climbers, don't forget. Like the big polar bear with boxer shorts, which was weird. And sunglasses. He had sunglasses too. So, you know, you throw in some of those, you throw in some new ones, and then you just, every mountain is different. Every mountain is, okay, we got to get to the top of the mountain. Then they get to the top of the mountain. Then it's like, do you want to play a new game? Yes, I do. Then the mountain's entirely different. Then it's about, okay, how fast can I get through this mountain? You know, what's the challenges? You know, how fast they could do speed runs. Like this, I think this would be a huge speed running game. All right. Like they could be like online leaderboards for like, and they can like, there could be like grades. There you go. You can pick the grade of mountain. Because there are grades of mountains in the real world.
Yeah.
There's grades of slopes. And you're like, okay, what kind of mountain do I want? I want a C grade. And like, okay, so challenging, but not too much. Then I want an S tier. I want an S tier. I want my thumbs to bleed as I'm trying to progress up this mountain.
Ah, yes. Go and make up to Mount Kilimanjaro, Mount Fuji.
Yes, Kilimanjaro. You know, like that kind of fun. And I think, you know, it's like, oh, but Nintendo games aren't meant to be this hard. But that's the fun of it. This could be that franchise for them. It's that, it's an adorable Dark Souls or an even more adorable Celeste, because Celeste was adorable, let's be honest. It was a beautiful story. But like, have like, imagine this with like Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening graphics. That would be the perfect visual style for this, but with Dark Souls / Celeste levels of difficulty. I think people would really resonate with it. They would be totally taken aback by it. And then they'd be like, no, this would be that game where I go, you know, I have to try again. We can get up there. Like, come on, Scott. Come on, Will. Help me climb this mountain together. We can do it. And then you're both, of course, fighting with who's Popo and who's Nana. Because no one wants to be Nana. Just joking, obviously. But Scott would be Nana. But, like, I could totally see that working. Just, it's simple mechanics. It's just about, you know, nailing the difficulty, and the control scheme would have to be very tight. But then again, they do Mario, they've done Donkey Kong, they've done other, you know, precision platforming titles. So they could totally do this. It would just be, can they get that right difficulty curve? And I totally think they can. So why not? Let's bring back the Ice Climbers and make some of this totally different from everything else out there. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
I think it would be fun too.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like, ever since we usually had the side order DLC, like I could definitely see them do a very similar roguelike with the Ice Climbers. So yeah, that's definitely a good idea.
Thank you. Hire me, Nintendo, please. I'm having a good week. This will just like cap it off. I'm totally gonna post about this on Twitter later. So I expect you two to retweet it. All right. Will, how about you? What's one B tier, quote unquote, character you think deserves a revival, a reboot, or another chance?
Like it. There's one character, pretty much when we were discussing it before, so I'm just going to go and continue on with that line of thinking. Like, yeah, Diddy Kong. Like, that, sure, we always had a Donkey Kong mainline entry with Donkey Kong 3 Freeze and all that, but Diddy Kong hasn't been in the spotlight for such a long time. And again, Diddy Kong Racing was definitely the key part of my life on the SC4 days. So, yeah, why not bring back Diddy Kong some way, somehow? And like, I don't know, since with Microsoft and and Rare, like with Nintendo, try to mix something back with it, or I don't know, bring some of the characters that Rare has made up in its lore. I mean, heck yeah, why not bring back Conker's Bad Fur Day to Diddy Kong once again? I know, yes, go back to the cutie wootie version of Conker and not the M-rated version that we know and love. But, or like, yeah, or just like the universe of Conker, Diddy, and just, I don't know, it feels like such a long time that, yeah, Diddy Kong Racing was indeed trying to like go encroach on the Mario Kart territory, but why not bring it back? Or I don't know, bring back something of the similar form of like Donkey Kong Country 2 was starting, him and Dixie, another platformer of some sort. Like, sure, I can feel like there's some, I don't know, pull like a Luigi's Mansion 2 of some sort, and like, yeah, have say like Donkey Kong is in trouble, and like have Diddy Kong or Dixie like help try to get them out like they did before. So, like, yeah, I personally feel like Diddy Kong is, well, he's not Donkey Kong, but again, he is a very good member of the family. So, like, I don't know, I feel like definitely is pretty much right, like in right time to like at least give him another venture again. I feel like, or if not Diddy Kong, I will probably say Daisy. Daisy of Mario Land, and just like, yeah, how I make her into have her own game in some sense. But that's another idea. So yeah, I mean, yeah, we just came from Princess Peach. Why not give Princess Daisy a chance to actually have a game of her own? So yeah.
I wonder what a Daisy game would look like, to be honest with you. But I mean, again, I never expected Princess Peach Showtime. So they clearly had the ability to make them, you know, unique. So you never know. Never know. All right, Scott, how about you?
I was initially thinking of Diddy Kong Racing, but...
but?
Well, we already covered Diddy Kong.
I know.
Type.
Yeah, sorry, I saw that one.
How
from
dare you?
No,
hey, no one claimed it. No one claimed anything. I just said, like, pick one, so, you know, it's not our fault. Anyway.
I know. But one that I think is a little more far-fetched that I don't think it's... I mean, this one just gets more meme than anything, but I think it would actually be interesting to see a comeback would be the Chibi Robo series.
Ah, man, I haven't heard that thing in a long time.
Yeah, that was, I mean, the last one was on the 3DS, I think. But
GameCube, I remember the GameCube.
No, the GameCube was where it was born, but the last one was on 3DS, I believe.
Yep. Yeah, the last recent venture, yeah.
Yeah, so I just think Chibi Robo is an interesting concept, and I know Robo... or Chibi Robo, at least, doesn't get nearly as much love as it used to. Granted, Chibi Robo is a lot more of a meme now than, I mean, when it was. But I do think it's interesting just to have a kind of a different type of platformer. Since Chibi Robo had a lot more kind of random things that they're trying to do with just like the house type of cosmetic of it being just like little robot, big house with a lot of different like mechanics with like battery life or robotic functions that are going around. And I think it'd be interesting to see what they could actually do on the Switch with that. Especially how much they could actually kind of just innovate on that idea. How much could you actually use with the Joy-Cons, or how much could you do with the functionality of the Switch? Of the battery or the power plug, you like, there's things that I know that you could try, like say like the battery of Chibi Robo could be attached to like the battery of the Switch or something, and so you can actually see like your battery life on the top left as you're playing the game.
Yeah. Like I could definitely see them. They can continue with that kind of idea. Ever since we had that adventure of Pikmin 4, so they could definitely clearly take something from that and like apply in the Chibi Robo formula. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think I'm just more interested in seeing how it could be done. Because I think there's a lot of like things you could play around with like the functionality we have at the Switch, as well as just like the types of things and shenanigans you get to into the game series.
Yeah, there was a rumor, I think this was before you came on the show, there was a rumor that Retro Studios was working on a Chibi-Robo game. The rumor was because they, someone who was like big in the company left, and they gave him like this big picture showing off all the games they worked on, so like Metroid and Donkey Kong, and then a part of the picture was obscured, and it seemed to have the Chibi-Robo plug.
Ah,
in the art, but obviously that never came of anything because now they're working on Metroid Prime 4, allegedly.
Allegedly.
So
it'll come out
eventually. Eventually on the Nintendo Switch 3. Switch you up? No. So yeah, we'll see. But I mean, Chibi-Robo would definitely be one of the more casual titles that would definitely lure in people if they could keep the adorable gameplay of it all.
Yep.
Again, WarioWare sold over a million, so I think Chibi-Robo could if they got the gameplay good enough. I mean, Pikmin 4 sold a lot. So
yes, it did.
So it went from like virtually no sales to a lot of sales. Like, again, that was the beauty of the Switch, is that because there were so many people playing, there was a larger sample size to say, hey, I'll give this game a shot.
Yep.
So, and that's what they need with the Switch, too. So if they can make these other franchises, go for it. Before we start, here are some other options. A true Yoshi's Island game. Haven't had one of those since the DS. And I don't mean Woolly World or, you know, the other one with Poochie. I'm talking about like a real full-on Yoshi's Island game. The last one was on the DS, so it's been a while. So let's get a Yoshi platformer back on here. I'm sure you could have a total blast with that. You wanted to talk about Chibi-Robo. How about Custom Robo?
Ooh.
There's I mean, with mech games coming back, I mean, why not? I mean, people want it, especially with online being much better now.
Yep.
They could totally rock it with the customization. I mean, what was it? Fires of Rubicon. What was that?
Armored Core.
I kept thinking Mech Warrior. No, Armored Core, you know, that one was huge. I mean, From Software totally rocked it with the customization elements and all that. So, like, this would be the perfect time. They could say, oh, but it's a knockoff, but it's our knockoff. It's our knockoff, dang it. So, you never know. Then, of course, there's the ones we talked about infinitely, like Kid Icarus getting another one. Donkey Kong is long overdue. F-Zero, obviously. Mother 3. Mother.
It exists somewhere.
No, it exists in Nintendo Switch Online in Japan.
Yeah.
So, the potential is out there, Nintendo, and the ball is in your court. So I hope that Princess Peach Showtime does sell over a million units so that you could say, hey, who can we do this with next? And please look for my Twitter post about Ice Climbers. I'm totally going to do that because I really, really like my idea now. So with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Tamp podcast. What B-tier character would you like to see get a new title, a revival title, a reboot title? Let us know in the comments below. And of course, what are you excited for Sonic 3? And Knuckles, technically, coming out soon and later this year. And who is your final? Make this right now. This is. We're gonna cut it off right here. Who is your final pick to voice Shadow? All right. Is it Keanu? Is it Hayden? Is it Nicolas Cage? You know, Sonic. It's like, I don't like that you're trying to come up after me. You know, I am the ultimate life form. You know, it's very uncouth that you're trying to fight me. All right. So, I kind of want that now. It's like, oh, it's a Rubik's Cube. That's very interesting. As the ultimate life form, I could totally solve it. Yeah, it would be gone in 60 seconds, you know. I heard that's a great movie. I'm sorry, I can't stop picturing Shadow with like Nicolas Cage glasses now. And never mind. We gotta focus, Todd. What did you think of the story about the Japanese police officer who decided to play Nintendo Switch instead of working? Please don't be like him, okay? What do you feel the proper tone is for the Legend of Zelda movie and how Westfall should handle it? Do you agree with me that Phil Spencer continues to be an idiot? The only answer is yes, you're welcome. And of course, were you on Team Keyboard in the Splatfest? And how much were you blasting your keyboard when you won? Let us know in the comments below. So, for Skull Kid Scott, Wario Will, I am Triforce Time. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not allies. We made it to the end of the level. So, raise the flag.